Dyslexia is a condition in the brain that makes it hard for a person to read, write, and spell. It's the most common learning disability in children, and many hope that a new law will help kids get the help they need. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Legislation that writes a definition of dyslexia into the Iowa Code for the first time has passed the legislature and will be signed into law by Governor Branstad this afternoon. This hour, we'll find out what dyslexia is, discuss the warning signs, and some of the different methods for treatment. We also want to hear from you. Have you or someone else in your family struggled with dyslexia? Tell us your story. Join the conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. Legislation that writes a definition of dyslexia into the Iowa Code for the first time will be signed into law by Governor Branstad this afternoon. This legislation is the result of strong advocacy from a number of groups, including a group called Decoding Dyslexia. Heidi Kroner is the leader of that group. She's also the mother of a son with dyslexia, and she's here with me now. Hello, Heidi.
Hello, Charity.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Oh, gosh, I feel like I'm meeting a rock star.
All right. Well, tell us, what does this legislation change?
Well, what we're hoping it will change is that it will bring more awareness to dyslexia in the education system. And we're hoping it will allow special ed professionals who want to talk about it in the school system to be able to talk about it in the school system.
Are there other learning disabilities that are specifically written into the Iowa Code?
That I don't know.
Okay, but this is something that you felt very strongly was important to the state of Iowa, to education in the state of Iowa. Why do you feel it's so important?
We feel it's really important because it honestly affects almost 20% of the population. If you look at mild cases to severe cases, scientific literature has been showing for over 50 years that this affects 20% of the population, and they can see it on fMRIs and brain scans.
And it's also something that goes undiagnosed in a lot of individuals, right?
Oh, totally. And it runs across all IQ levels. So a lot of people send their kids to school. Their kids are bright. They are smart. And then all of a sudden, they start to struggle in reading, writing, and spelling. And because everybody looks and says, well, this kid is bright. This kid's average intelligence. He must be lazy. He must not be trying hard enough. Or he must not be paying attention. And so the kids get labeled all of these names.
Troublemakers.
Yes, troublemakers. Exactly. Class clowns. That was my son. And so they
just aren't getting the help that they need.
They just aren't getting the help that they need. And a lot of these kids are very bright. I always use my brother for an example because when I was five, he was three, he got my dad's toolbox out. And my parents wouldn't buy us a big wheel. So he took my tricycle and he took it all apart, flipped it around, and made it into this low rider. And it still worked. I could pedal it, but the frame was all upside down. I mean, it was just totally contorted, but you could ride it. It looked like a big wheel. And when he got to school, he started to struggle with reading, writing, and spelling. And I was looking at my brother thinking, he's the smartest person I know. So I knew very early that reading, writing, and spelling wasn't a measure of intelligence because the smartest person I knew was having trouble with it. And he is a typical example of a dyslexic.
And your son also is dyslexic. When did you start to notice that he was having problems?
You know, honestly, it was preschool. We would go to preschool, and to check in, you would have to pick out your name and put it in a box. And then the teacher would come out every day and see whose names weren't in the box, and then she knew that those kids were absent. Well, for 2 years, every day we would go, and my son could not recognize his name. But I thought, oh, the school will tell me if there's a problem. So I ignored it. Then he went to kindergarten, and for kindergarten graduation, everybody sang this little alphabet song, and they sang the sounds. A, a, apple, B, b, boy. And my son's up there, and he's not singing the song. And he had trouble with learning his sight words. He had trouble identifying the middle sounds in words. I volunteered a lot at his school, and so he would always be pulled out in the hall, and I would have to work on the middle vowel sounds. Then we get to first grade, and he's showing some more classic signs, getting really tired while he's reading, always rubbing his eyes, not very fluent. The teacher sent home a lot of fluency homework. He skipped a lot of the small words. He could recognize a word on one page but not the other. These are all classic signs. So in second grade, I tell the second grade teacher, I'm noticing all these signs since preschool. And she said she'd keep an eye on them. Well, by the middle of the second grade, that teacher said, I'm retiring next year so I can tell you this, but your son shows all the classic signs of a child who's going to bottom out in reading by third or fourth grade. She said he's too bright to be performing where he's at. You need to get him help. And I was like, oh, okay. And I took her advice, so I went over to see the principal, and the principal said, oh, he scores too high on the standardized test. He doesn't qualify for help. And I'm like, yeah, but he shows all these signs, and the teachers have been pointing out all these places he's having trouble. So I lived across the street from the Heartland AEA, literally. So I gathered up all my son's schoolwork. I called up, sent an appointment, and I literally walked over to the AEA. I showed him all these things. I told him I had read about dyslexia and read a lot of journal articles. And the minute I said the word dyslexia, he said, oh, we don't use that word anymore. That's an old-fashioned diagnosis. And I said, well, I don't think it's old-fashioned. I said, I've read all these journal articles, and they're dated 2005, 2007, and I never heard back from him. So then I thought, okay, I'm all out on alone on this. I'm out on my own. I can't get any help from the school. So then I did just start searching the internet and trying to figure out where can I get him diagnosed. And I found out, you know, the schools don't diagnose. I went to the eye doctor. He said, oh, dyslexia isn't an eye problem, but I'll check his eyesight. I went to my medical doctor. He said, dyslexia is a reading problem. I don't diagnose. He said, I'll send you to an educational psychologist. Well, that one is going to take 6 to 9 months to get an appointment. So I waited 6 to 9 months, and they diagnosed him as attention deficit disorder. And I said, well, he does have trouble paying attention, but really he has a reading problem. So I just kept searching the internet, and I finally did find some programs in Des Moines that would help. And what I learned was not only that there's very specific programs, they're called Orton-Gillingham methods that work, and I found that they're very scarce. I had to drive 45 minutes one way to a tutor. And in the evening, they were very expensive. But my husband and I decided it was worth it. Reading and being able to spell and write correctly is extremely important in today's society.
And so, has it been effective for your son?
Yes. In fact, he never complained a day, not even one time, about going to these tutoring lessons. We went for 3 years, drove 45 minutes one way. He sat through an hour of tutoring. We drove 45 minutes home. I had supper all prepared so that when he came home, it wouldn't be stressful. He never once complained, and he always said they were helping. And now he's a sophomore in high school, and yes, he reads and writes and spells very well.
Well, we are going to talk about some of the other symptoms of dyslexia, warning signs that parents and others can identify, and some of the treatment methods as the hour goes on. I want to bring Michelle Hosp into this conversation now. She is director of the Iowa Reading Research Center, which is a relatively new organization founded in 2012. It's an online collection of literacy resources available to the public for classroom learning, teaching, at-home support, and for educator research. Hello, Michelle.
Hello, Charity. Thank you for having me today.
How does this law affect your work?
Well, actually, this law aligns directly with the work with the Iowa Reading Research Center has been charged to do through legislation. There are a couple things that directly align perfectly with identifying kids who are struggling in reading, kids with dyslexia. And I think the most critical thing that the center has been charged with is first identifying reliable and valid assessments for an early warning system. So are there ways that teachers can quickly identify who these students are that might be at risk for reading failure so that they can then get to the business of teaching them those evidence-based instructional techniques and strategies so that they can improve? Because the research is very clear that there are differences in kids who struggle in reading versus are normally developing students. But the wonderful thing about that is early intervention is the key. So if we can identify them early and we can provide them with evidence-based interventions, they can be successful in reading.
Now, Heidi really struggled to get help for her son, to get a diagnosis for her son. From your perspective, will this legislation make it easier for parents to get help from the schools?
I think one of the things that it does do is it gives that space for parents to point to something and say, look, we can't ignore this. There is now legislation that clearly identifies students who may be dyslexic and are struggling in reading. And so I think it provides an opportunity for that discussion and conversation to happen between families that, like Heidi said, when you listen to her story, what's amazing about that is that she said in preschool, she had those inklings that something was not quite right. And so this provides an opportunity for parents to go to schools and say, you know, there are things that we can do. We actually do have assessments that we can use in preschool to identify these kids as well.
And as students age and are in the school systems, I mean, I think that for a lot of parents, it would be rare to really identify those signs in preschool because, of course, when you're watching an emergent reader, a lot of interesting things happen. But as kids go on, this will also change the school's ability to help with a diagnosis?
Well, I think, you know, while parents may not be specifically tuned into what to look for kids in preschool, I think that teachers can be. And there are ways that teachers can identify these kids. And there are clear instructional interventions and strategies that teachers can implement right away and that they also could be helping their parents and families so that they can engage in similar activities to support their children at home. So I do think that it does have the potential for changing the educational landscape in Iowa. But critical to this is really identifying these kids early and then having best interventions and evidence-based strategies in place.
Michelle Hosp is the director of the Iowa Reading Research Center. Also with me is Heidi Kroner. She is the leader of a group called Decoding Dyslexia, also the mother of a son with dyslexia. We'll be joined in just a moment by Elizabeth Hawksberg, an executive director of the Apples of Gold Centers for Learning and Dyslexia. And we'd love to hear from you. Is this something that you've had an experience with or your family has experienced? Give us a call. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about dyslexia. There's new legislation that will be signed into law by Governor Branstad this afternoon that writes a definition of dyslexia into the Iowa Code for the first time. We're talking about the implications of that legislation, but also about dyslexia itself. We'll talk more about warning signs, early detection, treatment, and we also want to hear your stories. A lot of people struggle with dyslexia. Is this something you or someone else in your family has struggled with? Give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me is Heidi Kroner. She is the leader of a group called Decoding Dyslexia. They were instrumental in getting this legislation passed. Also with me is Michelle Hosp. She is director of the Iowa Reading Research Center. And Elizabeth Hawksbergen is here. She is executive director of the Apples of Gold Centers for Learning and Dyslexia, four different full-service learning centers in central Iowa. Hello, Elizabeth.
Yes, good morning. Thank you so much for having us.
Well, thank you for being here today. And you yourself are dyslexic, although you didn't actually know that until you were 31 years old. Can you tell me about some of the things that you struggled with as a child?
Absolutely. Here's a picture that might frame it in your listeners' minds. I was at the end of first grade. my father, a very tall man, took me into his arms and said, "Now, Beth, your teacher's talked to your mom and me, and she's letting us choose whether you go on to second grade. But she says you're having a really hard time with reading. So we've decided it's best for you to go ahead and go back to first grade." I remember being in his strong arms and immediately thinking one thought, "No, now everyone's going to think I'm stupid, and I'm not." I ended up repeating first grade. My parents did the best that they could. They found a German lady with a thick German accent to help teach me English phonics. Thankfully, with time, I didn't exactly overcome the dyslexia in the way that we want to help children overcome now. I just had very good visual memory. So I literally memorized what words looked like, continued to be a very poor speller throughout school. But as a firstborn, I was very motivated to do well. So I did, and I went to a private school in the Philippines, and I did have some opportunity to be successful. I had to work longer and harder on reading and writing assignments. But ultimately, I graduated as valedictorian. I say that just to share that many dyslexics out there are very intelligent people who have a lot of capacity but struggle with some of the things that have already been mentioned earlier. But it wasn't until I was 31 and we had just started our first learning center and I was reading some of the research on dyslexia, and it hit me like a cannonball with all the descriptors. This is me. This is why in college I had difficulty finishing my textbooks. This is why it takes me a long time to grade my language arts students' papers. This is why it takes me, I have more difficulty memorizing arbitrary information. And it was a moment of liberation because I understood once and for all why the unique struggles I had had that had really bulleted my path, why they were so. And it helped me understand that others, too, needed this information so that they could be free and understand that they're not unintelligent. There's nothing wrong with them, but they have a difference in brain structure.
You talk about the freedom that that diagnosis gave you, or that understanding gave you. How did it change your perception of yourself?
It increased the wind beneath my wings. My parents raised me in a way that I was very motivated to succeed and be successful, but it clarified really who I was. And it also, more importantly, clarified the path I needed to be on as a professional. And that was, many individuals out there are like me and they need information. They need effective evaluation and intervention so that they can capitalize on their abilities and potential and be successful.
When you were growing up and you were struggling with this, did you ever meet anybody else who seemed to have the same kind of problems?
Certain family members, and they might razz me later, so I won't name who they are, but several of us in our household had the same kinds of difficulties with reading and spelling and memorizing. And actually, I don't think my dad will mind, because we do talk about this. His PhD is from Florida State in aeronautical engineering, but he often shared how he had lots of difficulty memorizing his spelling words, and he was a very slow reader, and how he had other types of difficulties in school, even working on his doctorate.
So inside your family, but nobody outside your family?
Well, yes, I did encounter those things. And to be quite honest with you, Charity, now that I've been working in the field of evaluation and intervention for dyslexia for so long, my memory is most full with people, current case studies that I'm familiar
right.
with who are dealing with these kinds of things.
I'm just curious if you felt like it was something you had to hide.
Yes, I always tried to compensate through other strengths. I tried to be better through art and creativity and drama and singing, because I didn't feel like I was fast enough with or accurate enough with reading and spelling and writing.
When you discovered at age 31 that you were dyslexic, was there anything at that point? You had obviously come up with a lot of different coping strategies for yourself and had been very successful with that over the years. But did that knowledge give you any more tools that could help you cope better?
Well, I took, I think, an internal psychological sigh of relief and thought, oh, okay, so this makes sense. And then it really motivated me to research and study more about dyslexia so that I could understand my own situation and be a catalyst to help others too. And what's interesting, Charity, is even over the last decade, as I've deepened my knowledge on dyslexia, I continue to learn and understand more things about how my brain functions, and then I'm able to share that with others.
Well, I'm sure we have a lot of people listening who are thinking, wait, maybe that sounds like me, or, oh no, does that sound like like my child? A lot of people with a lot of questions. So we want to open up the phones. 866-780-9100 is the number to call to join the conversation. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And I want to turn now to some of the symptoms. Heidi, you talked about your son's symptoms earlier. Elizabeth, you were just talking about your symptoms as well. But let's talk about some of the classic symptoms of dyslexia. What are some of the signs that parents should be looking for? And Heidi, I'll let you list off a few of those, and anybody else who wants to jump in is welcome.
Two things I didn't mention that didn't affect my son but are very common is late talking and inability to rhyme or understand rhymes. Slow to learn their letters and letter sounds. So like you may have ABC blocks sitting around your house and your child's just never really registering that that's a letter on there. Trouble with spelling words. They can work so hard to study them all week. They take the test on Friday. They get half of them wrong. The letters are all there, but they're out of order. And then by next Monday, it was like they never studied those spelling words at all.
And they're just gone.
The other thing, too, is poor handwriting, skipping small words when they're reading, recognizing a long word on one page, but then they go to the next page, and because it's in a slightly different context, they can't recognize that word again. So those are real classic signs at a younger age, I would say before third grade.
And people with dyslexia, Elizabeth, they don't make random reading errors, right? There are patterns to what's going on.
Yes, typically, and this might be a good point to mention that just as everyone's fingerprint is different, everyone's neural map is also different, even among dyslexics. So even though they have neurologic similarities, there are differences among all dyslexics. You'll find a range from mild to mild, moderate to severe to profound in the severity of the dyslexia. So there are distinct things you can look for in the reading and spelling and writing patterns. However, within dyslexia, there are subgroups. There are different types of dyslexia, dysesthesia, dysphonesia, et cetera. So some children will evidence certain patterns more than others. For instance, some children will have more trouble with phonetic decoding of words than they will with sight word decoding. And some children will have difficulty with both.
Now, one of the symptoms that I've read about is confusion of the letters B and D.
This is a good one, yes.
Okay, confusion about M and W. Now, again, that's something that you do see in a number of emergent readers.
Right.
When does that become a warning sign?
That's an excellent question. Most of the literature would consider that a warning sign. Well, it can be – you want to watch for it early on, but really technically it doesn't become a real indicator until the end of first grade or the beginning of second grade. And the reversing of letters and numbers is actually a subset of dyslexia called dyspnemkinesia. And not all children or adults who have dyslexia have dyspnemkinesia. But reversing of letters and numbers is what many people commonly associate with dyslexia. Children who have dyspnemkinesia within their constellation of things that the dyslexia is causing, it does make learning to spell and write a little more problematic. But typically, if you're seeing it still in second grade on a fairly regular basis or even periodically, it's definitely something to consider. And you would never identify the presence of dyslexia, of course, with just one indicator. But these indicators always come in clusters. I have never seen one of our clients have dyspnemkinesia and not have a number of other indicators along with that.
Well, and I think there's sort of a misnomer about dyslexia that it means that you see words backwards.
Absolutely. And that's a huge misnomer. It's been proven emphatically over and over again through visual studies, scientific studies, that we do not see backwards, but it's more of an interpretation of that material when we put it back in print.
Okay. So can you give me an example of some of the common reading errors that someone with dyslexia might make?
Yes, and it might be important to note that if you're only a moderate dyslexia, you may manage first and second grade reading okay, utilizing your visual memory, kind of memorize what the words look like. By the time typically you get to third grade, if you're a moderate dyslexic, the number of syllables in words becomes more problematic to visually hold on to. So these children, if not sooner, because if you're severely dyslexic, you'll notice problems in kindergarten and in first grade, if not before, significant problems. But by third grade, they're having trouble phonetically decoding these words. So as Heidi was saying earlier, they'll know the word in the first sentence, and then three sentences later, they can't decode the word. They happen to figure it out based on context the first time, but they have great difficulty properly decoding it at a phonetic level three sentences later. You also very commonly will see them have confusion with sight words. They'll misread where for were, that for there. They also will typically or commonly add or delete suffixes or prefixes. There's just a lot of inaccuracy and lack of fluency to their reading. This is a funny way to say it, but I often say dyslexic readers they sound constipated almost when they're reading because there's such a lack of flow. Because their brain lacks the neural connectivity in the decoding areas to accurately and efficiently identify the sound-symbol relationships and then read appropriately.
Let's get to a few of the calls, and then we're going to focus more on diagnosis and treatment options for people with dyslexia. This is a comment from Kelly in Des Moines. She says, I'd like society to think differently about dyslexia. My husband has always been treated like he was dumb because of his dyslexia, when in fact, he's most intelligent. He thinks poorly of his abilities and smarts because everyone has always told him that he has a disorder. He couldn't attend the Catholic school in his hometown because they didn't have a resource program. In fact, the priest called him slow. Heidi, that's a point that you were making earlier about your brother, a very, very intelligent individual who couldn't read, write, and spell very well. And that does cause a lot of people to question the intelligence of an individual.
Correct. And what a lot of people like to point out is Thomas Edison and Albert Einstein both had dyslexia. Thomas Edison, his teacher told his mother that he was too retarded or too addled to learn how to read. She homeschooled him. Albert Einstein had to go to a special school to learn how to read. Both of these people, now when we look back at history, we can tell by their writing and their papers that they've left behind that they were dyslexic. So dyslexic really has nothing to do with intelligence, but how your brain processes information. And when they look at an fMRI, they can actually watch your visual patterns, they can put a normal person and a dyslexic person. I hate to say normal, but they can put the two brain types next to each other. They can watch how they think. And the 20% who are dyslexic will think totally differently, not just about reading, but about everything. They just process information differently. And this runs through the whole genome. Males, females, cross cultures, Chinese, Asian, Dutch. You can read a lot of studies about dyslexia, and they're from all different countries in the world, all different languages. It runs across the human genome. So I really think it's evolutionarily there for a reason. And I think a lot of these people are our inventors, our actors, our singers. It's interesting. Entrepreneurs have a high representation.
So there may, it sounds like you're saying, be a correlation with creativity.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Lots of people dispute that, but I think it's high.
All right, let's get to the phones. Liz is on the line from Des Moines. Hi, Liz.
Hi there.
Hi, what's your question?
Well, I have a little girl in my life, my boyfriend's daughter. She's 11 years old, and she is an excellent, excellent reader. She reads constantly, and she can read and comprehend writing at a 10th grade level, but her handwriting and spelling is probably about a first grade level. She still reverses letters and doesn't use punctuation, capitalizes randomly, stuff like that. So I was wondering if you could talk more about those different types and dyslexia, maybe, that doesn't necessarily correlate to just reading. She does still kind of, when she reads, she sort of fills in the gaps with shorter words. but she kind of has these her coping mechanisms to manage it is excellent. And I was wondering more about types of interventions that might be able to help the writing and spelling.
Okay, Liz, and hang on the line, Liz. We're going to have to take a break here, but we'll start that answer right now. Elizabeth, I mean, you mentioned that there are many different kinds of dyslexia. Does that sound like something that you could see with someone who's dyslexic?
Absolutely. Happens quite commonly. And when a child has difficulty with spelling, because that's the way the brain processes, that's a good indication how the brain is processing that sound, symbol, symbol, sound relationship. That is very much one of the manifestations of dyslexia. Another member of my family is a fast and an ardent reader and yet still poor with written expression and spelling. It's not true that dyslexics always have a great difficulty with reading. They usually have some degree of difficulty. And in our practice, we often find with these high schoolers, they're still inefficient decoders, which means the brain is using alternate wiring. It's not using the correct wiring. So even though she's very bright and she's able to decode well enough and then comprehend well enough, usually, if not by late high school, by college, they're less efficient with the reading than they should be. And if the brain can be properly stimulated, you can improve the connectivity so they become even better with decoding and comprehension and address spelling.
Okay, and we'll talk more about possible therapies or treatments to help someone with issues like that in a moment. We're talking about dyslexia this hour. With me is Elizabeth Hawksberg, and is Executive Director of the Apples of Gold Centers for Learning and Dyslexia, Michelle Hosp, Director of the Iowa Reading Research Center, and Heidi Kroner, the leader of Decoding Dyslexia. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about dyslexia. There's a new law that will be signed by Governor Branstad this afternoon that writes a definition of dyslexia into the Iowa Code for the first time. Many people are hoping that this law will help young people who have problems with dyslexia get the help that they need. With me today is Heidi Kroner. She's the leader of a group called Decoding Dyslexia. They were instrumental in getting this legislation passed. Michelle Hopps is here, director of the Iowa Reading Research Center, and Elizabeth Hawksberg, an executive director of the Apples of Gold Centers for Learning and Dyslexia. And Michelle, I want to go to you next. Liz is still on the line, so we can bring her back into the conversation if we need to. And she was talking about a young woman in her life who can read very well, but struggles with writing and spelling. And I'm wondering, so if I were the parent of this child or involved in this child's life or a teacher, how can I use the Iowa Reading Research Center to find information that I might need to help this person?
That's a great question, Charity. So I do think, you know, the Iowa Reading Research Center is relatively young. And we are just getting a lot of our resources up and going. But one of the things that we will have available this summer and be sharing with schools across the state in the fall is we have gathered resources that are specific for families. So what we did is we worked with national experts to help us and folks across the state, and actually some of Heidi's folks from Decoding Dyslexia are helping us with this project. And we are reviewing information that is currently available free for families that they could use to help their children in the homes. So if, for example, I'm a second grade teacher and I talk with a family and I say, you know, right now what we're working on is we're working on some spelling patterns or we're working on some vocabulary skills, that they would be able to go to the Iowa Reading Research Center and find additional activities that they could actually use at home to engage with their students. Now, I do want to clarify that these activities are not specific to interventions in the way that they are not targeted for students who are behind per se, but they are around good evidence-based instructional routines and things that families can engage with their children at home. So one of the things that we did talk about doing is if we get these family resources available across the state for all families to have access to, and we are focusing on pre-K up to sixth grade, that would allow families to find good video clips to watch, summary briefs of articles, as well as what apps are the best apps to use for my children. We did talk about, is there a way that we can then go back and recycle that process and potentially look at specific interventions for families that would go a little bit deeper? And so we are excited to make that information available for families, and we hope to have that information up and on our website by this summer.
All right. Heidi, earlier in the hour, you mentioned the Orton-Gillingham approach, which you were able to find someone to work with your son with dyslexia with that approach. Is there controversy about what kinds of methods work for young people with dyslexia?
I don't know if there's controversy so much as a lot of different systems are out there. But the research focuses that Orton-Gillingham is actually the proven method to actually change the brain wiring. So for a lot of dyslexics, there's all people use three parts of the brain to read. They use their sight, they use their executive function to comprehend and understand, and then most readers are using a section of their brain called the decoding section. It's called the three Easter eggs of reading. And the dyslexic is not sending thoughts over to the decoding section of the brain. They're just running the information back and forth between the sight and the executive function. What Orton-Gillingham does, it's multisensory and it's cumulative, and it forces the brain to start sending signals over to that decoding center. And if it's done systematically with enough intensity, over time, the brain will learn to build the wiring so that their reading goes to the three eggs just like everybody else's. And that egg, that decoding egg, is not damaged in the dyslexic. It's just their brain, for whatever reason, didn't want to use that part of their brain when reading. They just wanted to use sight and understanding. So Orton-Gillingham is really the proven method to get all three of those brain parts communicating with each other.
And Elizabeth, does that jive with your experience?
Yes, absolutely. Actually, effective intervention for the dyslexic brain is what I jokingly call brain therapy, because it will stimulate the neurons wherein there's either a lack of adequate dendrite growth or a lack of good synaptic alignment between those dendrites. And that's when there's a lack of good neurologic connectivity in the decoding section of the brain, then the brain's smart enough to know, well, this part's not going to work very well, so I'm going to use alternate regions. With effective multisensory cumulative systematic direct instruction and analytic and synthetic phonics, you can literally force the brain to build those neural connections, and that's been proven through a number of brain scan studies. However, one thing that's key is early intervention, because the brain has greater neuroplasticity the younger the child is. So literally, a child who's born with a lack of neural connectivity in the region of the brain needed to spell and write and read effectively or efficiently, if they're caught at age 4 and 5 and 6 and they're given effective intervention, the brain will rewire itself and they will not. And we know this from research, and I know it from hundreds of cases in personal experience. They will not have the same struggles in 4th and 5th grade. However, if we do not catch them until after 3rd grade, and research has shown this, it will cost us a lot more, not to mention the psychological frustration and angst, not to mention the familial difficulty, and even teachers trying their best to help these children and finding just they're frustrated because they can't help the children access the potential that the parent and the teacher know the child has cognitively. Early identification and intervention are essential, even with what brain studies show us.
We have an email from a mother in Cedar Rapids. She says, my son, now 26 years old, has dyslexia. We didn't recognize it, and he was not diagnosed until high school when we took him to a pediatric psychologist. He did not get appropriate intervention and to this day reads and especially writes poorly. Can anything help him at this age?
Yes, the brain is less responsive at this age, but it still works. Intervention still works when you're in high school and in college as an adult. I'm a perfect example. At 31, when I discovered I had the dyslexia and began studying and teaching the Wilson Reading System, literally as I taught other students who are dyslexic, my brain was properly trained. I now can spell and write phonetically, which I could not do at age 25. It is not too late.
I want to get back to the phones. Angie is on the line in Mingo. Hi, Angie.
Hi there.
Hi. And your question is not about dyslexia, but about dyscalculia, right?
Yes. I grew up with it, not knowing what it was. My parents were always so frustrated with schoolwork because I needed the help. I couldn't figure out what was going on with the math.
And for people who don't know, dyscalculia is a problem understanding numbers.
Yes.
Okay. So go on.
It's similar to dyslexia, except with numbers. And I didn't find out what it was called or what it was until adulthood. And I'm now seeing signs in my oldest son, who's 4, that he may have the same problem. And I'm kind of wondering, do they know more about it now? Is there programs for him now that could help him?
Elizabeth, can you speak to that?
It's actually not uncommon to see dyslexia and dyscalculia cluster together. However, a general rule of thumb with any kind of effective instruction, i.e. intervention, is that, and this has been proven through research once again, if a child's having difficulty memorizing numbers as far as number recognition, number retrieval, number formation, and then manipulation of numbers as they get older or math fact retrieval, using a multi-sensory approach to instruction where there's a lot of cumulative review. In other words, what we learn in week A, we're going to continue to review in 8 weeks later, as well as direct, explicit instruction. This will even help someone with dyscalculia perform as well as possible. They may have to continue to compensate in later years. They may not be quite as efficient as someone without dyscalculia. However, there is a great deal that can be done if intervention is provided early on, back to the brain science and the neuroplasticity thereof.
Okay, Angie, thank you so much for your call. I want to go back to Heidi's story from earlier, because I'm sure Angie's in a position where, okay, she sees these signs in her son. She wants to get help. I understand that the new law should make that easier, but what should a parent like Angie or any other parent who is thinking, yeah, this sounds like my child, what is their first step? How can they get help? Any one of you can jump in there.
I'm going to let somebody else jump in because that is why our group formed. We found that the diagnostician part of it is the hardest. So for dyslexia, we now have a list of screeners. If you think you're just working with dyscalculia, I would ask Elizabeth who would be the best to take a look at that.
We work with a number of different psychologists and clinicians, and we do a lot of testing ourselves. But if I get a call from someone who's 2 hours away, then we'll try to put them in contact with someone in their area that can do that type of diagnostic work. Here's the thing that's so exciting.
And would a pediatric psychologist be the typical person who would make that diagnosis? Or?
Sometimes. It's not really necessary to go that route. And this is – I want to segue real quickly. If we are able to get the proper screening tools into our school – with the new rollout of the FAST system, this is going to do an enormous amount for the average student and family who's struggling with this type of issue to identify it in preschool and in kindergarten and first grade at the literacy and at the math levels. So, yes, you can go to a professional. One precaution, professionals, even psychologists, tend to have areas of specialization. So we are aware of that in our practice. But I need to clarify something. In over 10 years of working with these families, the tragedy is there's not enough availability of identification in different cities in the state of Iowa. So, and some families can't afford to go through that process. So it's critical that we begin to provide this type of identification at the school level if we're going to turn the tide with reading difficulties in the state of Iowa. So, yes, we can refer you to a psychologist. We can do testing at our centers or other places that do testing, but ultimately we want to see the schools getting more efficient with the right tools doing that, and that's what the new legislation is moving toward.
All right. I want to go back to the phones. Kim is on the line in Iowa City. Hello, Kim.
Hello.
Hi. What's your question?
My question is about Heidi's early statement that dyslexia, she was told by a principal, is now called ADD. No one's talked about that relationship during the program, and I wonder if you could now, please, where they overlap, if it's really just the same name for something different, whatever.
Okay, great. And we actually had a very similar email asking that very same question. What is the relationship?
The relationship is that they can co-occur together, or dyslexia can look like ADD because the brain is so overtaxed and tired from reading that the kid needs a break and they start to either act out or not pay attention, trying to give that overworked brain a break. And so for my child, the ADD therapies did not work. The dyslexia ones worked, but it was trial and error for us for about a year. And I would say they can, science has showed they co-occur, but they also can, one can mask. The dyslexia can appear to be ADHD or ADD.
One quick note on that. I agree with that completely, Heidi. Research shows it's about a 40% overlap. So about 40% of people with dyslexia will have some form of ADHD. In fact, in our practice, if the child comes in with dyslexia, we'll look for indicators and then send them for further testing because they are found in conjunction with one another very commonly. And one will complicate the other, because imagine if you're already dyslexic and you're trying to learn to read and spell and write and memorize your math facts and the state capitals, and yet you also have trouble with focus and sustained attention. So it's best practice to address both issues if they are occurring simultaneously.
We've been talking about dyslexia this hour, and we have just a couple of minutes left. And I want to ask each of you, and Michelle, I'll start with you. I mean, in this age of severe budget cuts at schools throughout the state of Iowa, what kind of resources can our schools offer to a student who is dyslexic, and does this law impact that? Michelle?
Thank you, Charity. Actually, there is legislation right now that does require schools to, in grades K through 3, provide a universal screening assessment for every student 3 times a year. The state has actually, in conjunction with the Iowa Reading Research Center, funded that system that is available for every school in the state. We currently are supporting 15% of the districts who have piloted that this year, and an additional 300 plus some non-public, additional 40 non-public schools have also signed up to get training this summer so that they can have this system in place. Starting in the fall, it is a requirement by law, and the state has said this is so critical, and this early identification and intervention is so critical for these kids that we will do this at a systems level. The unfortunate thing right now is through the Senate's appropriations, they have not fully funded that. So we are hoping that the House will see the great need and all of those schools and families that are depending on this and get behind us and support this legislation.
What is the timeline?
Well, the House is meeting every day this week. So for those parents and schools that really want to have something in place to help teachers identify these students and your kids right away 3 times a year, I would ask you to reach out to your legislators and please let's get behind this in Iowa and let's help all kids become proficient readers.
Michelle, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you, Charity.
Michelle Hosp is director of the Iowa Reading Research Center. Elizabeth Hochsbergen, thank you very much.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Elizabeth Hochsbergen is executive director of the Apples of Gold Centers for Learning and Dyslexia. She has 4 different full-service learning centers in central Iowa. And thank you so much, Heidi Kroner.
You're welcome, Charity. It was a pleasure.
Heidi Kroner is the leader of a group called Decoding Dyslexia. Her group was very instrumental in getting this legislation passed. Again, this law will be signed by the governor this afternoon that puts a definition of dyslexia into the Iowa Code for the very first time. This is Talk of Iowa coming up today at noon. It's River to River with Ben Kiefer, and Ben's in the studio with me now. What's on the show today, Ben?
Hi, Charity. As usual, Politics Wednesday and plenty to chew over on our political landscape. Our analysts today, Jim McCormick of Iowa State University, Wayne Moyer of Grinnell College, will be talking about the re-escalation of the crisis crisis in Ukraine. Also, we'll be talking, of course, about Governor Branstad firing the head of Iowa's administrative department yesterday. Analysis on that and plenty more. Charity.
All right. Thanks a lot, Ben. River to River coming up today at noon. I'm Charity Nebbie.